Marty, can I brag on some people for a while?
Sure, good.
I need to look around and get somebody's permission to do this. Pat Welch fixes meals Wednesday evening. I don't know how she does it. It doesn't matter whether 20 people are there or 60 people are there. She just, you know, stretches it out, adds some water, and gets it all done. But here she does it every Wednesday, and then after the meal, she goes up to Susan and says, "Can I help with the gyms? What can I do? I want to be a part of that." Man, that is great! God bless you! I don't know how Betsy Washam does this. She's a good teacher. She gives her time to the teaching, and then she gets selected as Teacher of the Year, which means, I guess, she's on call to do all these other things. But there she is in Lydia, Saturday morning, getting at it. And Doris, I think you line people up correctly in their jobs. Lindy Scott was at Lydia this morning, just crawled in, just sore all over the place, and limping. But she was talking about how, you know, Lydia's family sort of came out of the woodwork to sort of help and to participate. And, you know, that's just marvelous. And one of the reasons I'm saying this is the largest group there was Bethany. And you all provided the leadership infrastructure. Those of you that know much about Lydia know that the churches are all declining and most are older members. They're very interested in doing this, but it requires somebody to sort of come alongside and enable it to happen. And so I just want to thank you and applaud you and commend you for your enabling it and enabling such a beautiful thing. This thing sort of grew out of Doris's group, the local mission ministry team, and then they sort of got into Operation Inasmuch, and really appreciated all of you that provided leadership for the various work teams and eating teams to make it happen. And I know that Doris and the others of you that are going up to the Monterey Week Kirk Conference will be looking forward to sitting down with David Crocker, the founder of Operation Inasmuch, and debriefing with him and getting his perspective on things. I have really enjoyed the Wednesday evening discussion on Regiment Neal's Missional Renaissance. Really some lively discussions, disturbing discussions, interesting ideas. And this past week, they suggested that I should not speak, that I should not teach or preach this morning, and so I'm not. That's the way I... Margaret, was that the right interpretation? You got it? Well, I preached my heart out at Lydia and Todd this morning, but I ain't going to do it here because I'm going to give you the job. But I do want to share one or two, three words to sort of prime the pump just a little bit. You know, if what Jesus said to the church at Ephesus, I really appreciated the words, the lyrics of our singing this morning, but if what Jesus said to the church at Ephesus is right, that you've lost your first love, and if our African brothers in Africa are saying to the church in the West that we've lost our first love, we better take stock of that. Now, when Jesus or church leaders in other places say you've lost your first love, they're not really talking about you've lost an emotional component. You've lost your affection for Jesus. That's part of it. But it's not primarily an emotional issue. If you'll unpack that passage in Revelation 2, and the reason the Africans will say it is not that you don't have any feelings, but they're saying to us, your manner of life betrays your affections. In other words, we've lost or thrown upside down our core values and our priorities, and our very manner of life and our lifestyle indicates where our affections are and what is our first love. That's what people are seeing, and I think that's what Jesus saw in the church at Ephesus. That is very sobering. Now, if that's the case, you know, if my values need to be readjusted, if my core priorities need to be readjusted, if my whole manner of life needs to be readjusted, that is a tough call because I don't change very readily. Now, I don't know about you, but if you drive through Canada going to Alaska, there's a dirt road up there, and there's a big sign that says, choose your ruts carefully because you're going to be in them from here on. And, you know, in life, we pick out ruts. And, you know, we learn those ruts. And they get comfortable for us. And they feel secure. They feel right. They fit. We want to stay in those ruts. And Jesus says, if you don't change, I'm moving out. Now, if we come to the determination that maybe something needs to change, and we send Judy and Doris off to a workshop, weekend workshop, and they come back, and they report to us. And they say, you know, we've got it. We got it. We know what we need to give up, and we need to know what we do need to be doing, and we need to know where we're going. We got it. You know, is that going to translate into transformation here? Probably not, because we don't own it. We aren't really motivated. And there's really not a process by which we can sort of work this thing out into our very core being. And it is hard for me to change. Let me tell you, it's hard to turn the ship of a congregation. Now, in that spirit, I want to just share with you a verse or two, and then we're going to turn it over to you. I want you to share, you may be inclined to lead in a prayer of repentance, or a prayer of petition, or a prayer of thanksgiving, or you may want to share a word or two along the lines of what we've been going through in our triplets, not specific insights. You know, Judy's going to tabulate all that, and we're going to be working on that this weekend. And by the way, this weekend only marks the first segment of a three-segment process of the strategic journey. So it's not finished yet. You know, these folks want us to make sure that it sticks, you know, that we get it, that we're discerning God's will and His voice, and that we're able to implement it. So in a few minutes, I want different ones of you to feel free to share what you're sensing that God is doing through the process. But let me share one of my favorite verses in all of Scripture. It hammers me every time I read it, and I want you to get hammered too. This is Mark chapter 2, verse 22. Jesus is speaking. Now, as Jesus is speaking this, this made good sense to his hearers. So they would be nodding. Yeah, that's true. That's obvious. But, you know, we're in the 21st century, and we aren't quite as clear about the imagery, the wineskin imagery. Jesus says, and no one pours new wine into old wineskins, and everybody would have nodded because the old wineskins are stiff and rigid and do not give, and a new wine is still pulsating and releasing gases, so it just all blow up. No one pours new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the wine will burst the skins, and both the wine and the wineskins will be ruined. No, he pours new wine into new wineskins. Now, what's sobering to me about that passage, you almost get the sense is, Jesus is almost saying is, I'm not going to waste my new wine. You know, if you aren't ready to flex, no need to bore all of us and all of us lose it. That's very sobering to me. Let me give you another imagery. A couple of years ago, some of us went to a conference in Maine. You know, you all have really bit off a lot. I just fear for you. This past Friday, 8 of our cluster churches met here at Bethany along with Presbytery staff. And this cluster is going to put on a nationwide event on clustering. Nobody else offers it. It's nowhere. And so Louisville office, our denomination, is, and we've already lined up the 5 keynoters who are very distinguished people around the country. But, you know, a lot of this energy behind the cluster and doing this kind of thing came from you guys. And, you know, I thank God for you, but it also means He increases the opportunities of your service. But anyway, we went up to Maine a couple years ago for an event with some clusters up there. And at the closing dinner, they served us lobster. Now, I don't know how many of you love lobster, but this, I'm talking about a pile of full lobsters. And so they drop a big old lobster on your plate. Now, I've never, you know, dismantled a lobster. Now, I don't know what to do with a lobster. So I had to watch what people are doing. And even though I watched, I made a huge, glorious mess of it all. But anyway, when lobsters are growing, if they're going to grow, they've got to discard their shell. Now, that's a very touchy thing to do. You've grown accustomed to your shell. It is your security. It's your comfort zone. That shell is absolutely essential to your life. But if the lobster wants to keep growing, it's got to discard the shell. If it doesn't, that shell becomes a prison and ultimately a casket. And so the time comes when the lobster, the growing lobster, discards the shell, and it is extremely vulnerable to all its predators. I mean, it is a ripe target to be had. And so that time of transition from giving up an old form to embracing a new is very difficult and very touchy. And that's true for us as well. I mean, because, you know, we grow accustomed to what we feel like works, and we want to stay there. But Jesus is saying, folks, I'm always doing a new thing. It's always fresh. It's always pulsating with life. And if you're going to walk with me, and if you're going to be an instrument of mine, you better be ready to flex. Now let me share with you a quote from a rabbi. This is what a rabbi is telling his pupil. Experiences of God cannot be planned or achieved. They are spontaneous moments of grace, almost accidental. So the student responds, if God realization is just accidental, why do we work so hard doing all these spiritual practices? The rabbi responds, to be as accident prone as possible. Now, in some ways, that's what we're talking about doing in this process. To be as accident-prone as possible. To just stumble up on God. To bump into Him around the corner. I mean, that can be spooky stuff. Because, you know, if you bump into God, who's going to have to move? He's a little bigger than you are. If you engage in an argument, you know, who's going to end up losing? My hunch is you are. So let's spend a few moments, you know, thinking about, we're in this process of discernment, you know. He that has ears to hear, let him hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. That's the process we're in. What are we learning? What are those unctions? What are those convictions? What is God communicating to you in this process? Feel free to share.